lot of stress.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The headline this morning was supposed to be stress test results to be released today, but no, the Treasury Department took care of that and delayed the public release. It'll be Thursday before any of us gets a good look at what the tests showed. This morning, we're hearing Citigroup, Bank of America, and a couple of other lenders will try to convince the Federal Reserve and Treasury that they're not as bad off as the government says. But despite those claims, several are already looking for ways to raise more capital. Here's Marketplace's Steve Henn.
It's the usual suspects. Bank of America and Citigroup are both already trying to raise more than $10 billion, according to the Financial Times. The paper says B of A actually needs much more than $10 billion to get back on firm financial footing. A couple large regional banks could be in trouble, too. Wells Fargo and Pittsburgh-based PNC do a lot of business in places with really bad real estate markets. The government's giving troubled banks 6 months to raise the cash they need. Many analysts say raising money from the markets after a less-than-stellar performance on these stress tests could be tricky. But officials are widely expected to say while some banks might need a bit bigger financial cushion, they're all still solvent. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Another week, we'll see if stocks have more juice in them. On Friday, the Dow gained about 0.5%, 44 points, closed at 82.12. The NASDAQ, about 0.1%. S&P 500 shares up about 0.5% as well. All three indices gained an average of 1.5% last week. No trading for the Nikkei today because of a holiday. Other Asian markets were up big time. The Hang Seng shot up 5.5%. Apparently fears of the swine flu are easing there. European markets mostly up too, but London's FTSE isn't trading either because of a British holiday. Well, the European Union today came out with a gloomy outlook. It says the economy there is in its deepest recession since World War II, and a rebound from the fallout isn't likely until the second half of next year. Fiat's CEO is in Berlin today to talk with the German government about taking over General Motors' Opel unit there. That prospect has prompted some groans among employees. Sergio Marchionne was to meet with the country's economic and foreign ministers. GM's European operations employ about 25,000 people at four plants throughout Deutschland. Of course, Fiat's already got its hands full with Chrysler here in this country. And now that that marriage has taken place, what kind of kids will result? As in, what kind of cars and trucks will this new company offer Americans? The standard line is better and more fuel-efficient vehicles. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports on whether car buyers will bite.
The Fiat Topolino, one of Europe's first economy cars.
Before Fiat abandoned the U.S. in the early 1980s, it went after the early market for saving money at the gas pump.
The Fiat Strada. Strada combines the best gas mileage of any compact car in America.
Fuel efficiency is fashionable again, so expect smaller Chryslers that look like, among other models, the Mini Cooper-sized Fiat 500. Chrysler is known for stodgier suburban minivans and could also use another type of fashion.
That whole Italian thing is unique.
Roger Hart, the managing editor for Auto Week in Detroit, says Chrysler needs a more sporty image.
Part of this mix, we would hope, would also be the lineup from Alfa Romeo, which had also talked about coming into the U.S. market even before this hookup with Fiat and Chrysler.
Analysts say Fiat's sportier cars will aim at a more urban customer, and that would mean moving Chrysler dealerships from the suburbs to the city. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thriven Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members navigate troubled economic times. Thriven.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
We're set to get more economic barometers this week. Construction spending today, service sector numbers tomorrow, April unemployment on Friday. Things have been sour at best on a number of those fronts lately, but there's one gauge of the economy that's been on an upswing, the stock market. And that lends itself to the question of whether that's a sign of things to come.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is with us now. Alan, truth or tale? Stocks really make a difference in the outlook of things?
Well, we can make that at least some of us have a lot more wealth than we did 2 months ago, you know, which is always nice. And that you can see there's a spirit of optimism created by the fact that stocks are up because that's the indicator most people see. And they tend to be happier when it's up than when it's down.
These stocks, namely the S&P 500, it's one of the leading economic indicators that the Conference Board looks at, right?
Right. And there's a myth in the world that when the stock market goes up, it means the economy is going to be strong, you know, a few months down the road, and that when the market goes down, it's forecasting economic weakness. And that's the reason that the Conference Board uses this as one of the indicators. However, there are at least 10 others, some of which have greater weight in the calculations than the stock market does. There's the difference between long-term and short-term rates. There are all sorts of things about construction and orders and applications for unemployment insurance. So the S&P 500, which is what they use, is one of 11 indicators and not the most important one. And that's because it is not terribly reliable.
So what indicator would you look at? What's the most accurate one, the one that you've looked at that you say, this is how I'm going to determine what the heck's going on?
I don't pretend to know what the economy is going to do in the short run, so I don't clutter what few neurons I have remaining in my mind by worrying about things like this because I know I can't predict it. I try not to get involved in things where I know I'm going to mess up.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan joining us from New York. Alan, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hope you can check out our website, marketplace.org. The Scratch Pad is there. Our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow. And you can share your thoughts with us, too, at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.